Good morning, friends. It's been a while, hasn't it? But I'm glad to see all of you this morning. Are you encouraged? If you watch the news, you'll be discouraged. But you know, when I watch the news, my mind goes forward to the day when this huge, majestic, giant golden city comes out of the sky and lands back on the earth, and the earth once again becomes what God intended it to be. I tell people who call into Better Life that God loves us so very much. When he went in Genesis, you can read about when he created the world and he put everything out there. He was doing it for us. Like when you prepare a nursery for a new coming baby, you put this in, you put that in, you buy the best this and the best that. You might even paint the walls because you want that room to be so special for the new one coming. In the same way, when God came and made the earth, he put all the specialness into it. He filled it full of trees and plants that were so good to eat. And if you like cherries, figs, walnuts, oh my goodness, there's a tree that makes just about everything. And God did that for you because he wanted you to be happy. And he didn't stop there. He said, let's fill it with animals too. They're going to love animals. Now, I told about some bad monkeys this morning, but the animals in heaven are not bad. They're good. The good monkeys, kids. Look forward to the good monkeys. And the lions and tigers, God made them so that you would just want to reach out and pet them and touch them because they look so furry. Everything God did was to make us happy. Everything that Satan does makes us sad. So one day God's going to put that all in place. I wanted to tell you a little bit from Better Life, a little news from Better Life. Some of you know what Better Life is, but just in case there's somebody here who doesn't, over in Grants Pass, there's a ministry called Better Life Television. It's been going since 1990. How many years does that give us? 31? Did I do my... I'm not good at math, so I always ask for help. That many years, God has paid the bills. To have a television ministry can be rather expensive. But all those years, God has paid the bills. And people have come into the truth. We get phone calls and emails and letters of all kinds that people and things that have happened, they're joining the church, they're getting baptized, that never would have happened had God not raised up in somebody's heart, in a group of people's heart, that there needs to be a television station to reach out to Oregon and beyond. Delmer Wagner has since passed away, but I'm glad that he said yes to God. The older I get, the more I realize God's just looking for people who will say yes. If God tells you to do something and you say yes, money is the least of your problems. You will feel like it is one of your biggest problems, but it is really the least of your problems. And God has always paid the bills, and we are not in debt, to my knowledge, unless they've done something recently. And the Lord has continued to bless. Now, sometimes at worship time, we get together and we'll do prayer time where we read the prayer requests that have come in, and different ones of us take turns doing worship and pray. And sometimes when I pray a prayer that goes something like this: Lord, please help people find the signal of Better Life however they need to find it. Maybe even in some special way you'll have the people discover the signal of Better Life. Well, as I recall, a few weeks ago I had a prayer like that when I was doing worship, and I don't think it was too long thereafter that I got an email. And I love when emails come in. We have a lot of our material now on YouTube. In the past, we had mostly received letters and phone calls from people in Southern Oregon, a little bit in Washington, Northern California, and you know we have a transmitter in Reno, Nevada, too. And so we'd get all these messages in. But now this email did not come in from any of those places. It's a little further away, a place called the UK. Heard of it? Wales. It came in. And I'm really hoping that's a part of the UK, I'm assuming. And this lady wrote in and she said, we found your programs on YouTube. And we had a little bit of a conversation, a little bit of a dialogue, and then she told me the special part that made my heart warm. She says, one day my husband went into the computer and sat down because he had bookmarked a George Mueller story that he wanted to hear. You know who George Mueller is? He used to run orphanages back, in the 1800s. He was a man of God, and he believed in faith, and he let God pay the bills as well. was not Seventh-day Adventist, but he wanted to partner with God, and he did. And so her husband went in and started playing this video that was about George Mueller. And then all of a sudden, as he was sitting there, the video changed. The video changed on its own. Guess what it changed to? To better life. While he was sitting there watching, it started to be the Stories of Faith program. And he was reaching over to change back to what he had been watching when all of a sudden the words that were being said caught his interest. And he started watching. And he ended up watching the whole thing, is my understanding. And then when he told his wife, I found this new program. It just came up on the computer. You want to watch it with me? And she wanted to watch it. And by the time they had contacted us, I believe they were on program number 50-something. We have nearly 70 half-hour programs under the title of Stories of Faith. Have any of you seen that program? Sayuti, I get to do it. I'm very happy to do it because I love it. I love the program, and I'll tell you why I love it. Sayuti and I do the program. Sayuti Rodriguez, Pastor Tony's wife. We get to do a program because we get to share what God has done in modern times as far as miraculous things. You know how people sometimes will say, oh, God stops doing miracles after the Bible. Well, let them watch one of the nearly 70 programs we have, and they'll see what God is doing nowadays. And they can be amazed. So anyway, they watched all that, and they were blessed, and they contacted us. And we've had other people contacting us from around the world, from India, from Canada, different places. And so it's been a real blessing to have the expansion of Better Life. But it only happened because one man said yes to God, and people joined in and said, yeah, we'll help you. We'll help you. So, got to get my glasses on for the rest of it. I'm sorry. That's one of the things I'm going to appreciate about heaven, too. No more glasses. Now, the title of today's sermon is The Power of Stories. The Power of Stories. Any of you like a good story? Did you know there's a lot of power in stories? And there's a reason I say that. Let me give you one example that I recently came across. There was a gentleman, and I believe he was a journalist, and he was interested in finding out, can a story add a value to an object? Can a story add a value to an object? So he went out to thrift stores, and he bought little knickknacks, cheap things, like a dollar. He'd buy a bunch of them. And then he set up an eBay, he had his eBay account, and he asked some people he knew who wrote stories, would you please write a story for this item? Doesn't need to be true, just write a story. So they would write a story. For example, about $1, he bought a tin that was heart-shaped. A tin. Used to hold candy, right? Didn't have candy in it now, but it used to. On the front of the tin was a picture of Elvis when he was young. So it was heart-shaped. It was an Elvis container. He picked it up for about $1. He said, would you write a story for this? So one of their writers got down there and started writing a story, and it was a fanciful tale. It wasn't true, and I think they noted on the eBay thing it wasn't true. It was a story about a girl who always attached a sentimental value to food and her boyfriends. And she would talk about different boyfriends. One guy dumped her when they were having shrimp or something. She said she's never had shrimp since. And she told all these stories. And then she told a story about when she was a little girl, she met Elvis. And she, something about sharing chocolate with him or something. I forget. But some little sweet thing where he leaned over and gave her a kiss, that kind of thing. Anyway, so it was a sentimental sweet piece, totally made up. But at the end, it was like, oh, you look at this thing, and you go, oh, that has sentimental reason, feelings for her. Would you dare to guess how much that sold for on eBay when it was attached to that story, that made-up story, a $1 little knick-knack? It went for, I'm sorry, it was purchased for 50 cents. It went for $24. That's an increase, isn't it? Stories have value. Stories have power to add value to things. Now, let me ask you, the Bible, it's a book of stories, primarily stories. You're going to find some prophecy in there. You're going to find some begats. Oh, it's hard to get through those begats. But primarily, it's stories. The fall, the flood, Tower of Babel, Daniel in the lion's den, I mentioned this morning. stories of the early church and the life of Jesus. Story, 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 story. And the Bible is very valuable to us, isn't it? Jesus knew himself the power of stories, and he told some wonderful stories. The Good Samaritan, the story of the dishonest judge, and perhaps one of my favorites was the story of the prodigal son. Here you have Jesus talking about a man who loses his son to foolishness. And the son goes out, and you know the story very well, goes out, finds himself in trouble, eventually says, I was better off back at my dad's place. I should not have taken my inheritance and come here. I'm going to go back and beg to be a servant. Now, the beautiful part of the story for me is that there was the father looking out at the road. And when he saw the form of his son coming down that lane, what did that father do? Jumped up and ran to meet him. His heart desire had been fulfilled in the return of his son. And while his son was there ready to explain to him that he would just be a servant, he had this whole speech written out. The father was taking off his coat, wrapping it around his son so he wouldn't be embarrassed by the way that he looked. Did you catch that part? He didn't want the son to be embarrassed about the way he looked. And then he wrapped him in and said, "We're having a party because you're home now." And in that lesson, Jesus told us how God feels about us when we decide it's time to come home. How he wants to save us from that embarrassment. How in his heart he's just overwhelmed with love that you're home. I have you back. You might have been gone forever. So Jesus knew the power of stories. A beautiful thing. Simple stories, but powerful things to remember. And as I told you before, I have a very soft place in my heart for stories. That's why I'm thankful to be part of Stories of Faith, the program we do. But on the program Stories of Faith, we do more than just tell stories, because you can tell stories. But what I like to do is I like to wrap lessons around those stories. Lessons around the stories. So that we're teaching, because we're having a lot of non-Adventist folks watch the stories. So every now and then we'll have a story about the Sabbath, for example. A miracle that happened regarding the Sabbath. And so before we tell the story, I'll say, "Oh, you folks may not understand about the Sabbath. Let me tell you real quick. We do the Sabbath because of da 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 da." So now I've been able to explain to them what the Sabbath is, because they need to know that in order for the story to make sense. So they didn't realize they were being taught about the Sabbath, perhaps, but they were. I wanted to give you an example, because there's one story that we've told about the Sabbath that I just love. We had a gentleman working for us, and his name was Neto. Some of you may have had a chance to meet him at some point. He was from Brazil. He came to the United States and he didn't know how to speak English. And it was funny because his English now is really, really good. I would not have known that English was not his first language. A young man. And he went and he worked at 3ABN for a while, and then he worked for Better Life for a while. And his mom had something happen to her that was quite miraculous. And I said, could we use that story on Stories of Faith? And he said, yes. And he had his mom write it up, and then they translated it to English. And I don't normally like to read stories, but I want to read this one to you because I don't want to miss any detail. Okay? Let me pull it up. I got it here. And I want you to hear what happened to this gentleman's mom. Like I said, this is translated, so some of the words may be a little rough, but I think we got it. She writes, "When I went to college, I tried to do my classes. When I went to college, I tried to do my classes that I had to do so that it would not fall on Saturday, just so I'd not have problems because I'm an Adventist. In the fourth year, I would have to do a class that without the class, I could not graduate." This is her fourth year. She's getting ready to graduate. And there's one class she has to have. "I was very happy because the classes were during the week and none of them were on the Sabbath. But the teacher in the middle of the year decided with the university that they would give a lesson on Saturday. And I was very sad, so I went to speak to the professor. She heard me with a smile on her face, and when I finished speaking, she smiled sarcastically and told me that I would not pass with my absences, even if I had all A's on all of my tests. I went to the director of the history department, and he said that the teachers had autonomy in their schedules and that the university could do nothing for me. I then went back to speak to my professor, and she told me to talk to my pastor so he could maybe give me special permission. I told her that the pastor had nothing to do with it, and the problem was with me and God, and that the Lord would solve it for me if he wanted. I went home that night, and I asked the church members and friends to pray for me. For the whole semester, I woke up at dawn to pray that God would intervene in my behalf, and I gave it into the hands of God. Think about it a second. What would you do in this situation? What would you do if this was you? Getting ready to graduate, you need one class, and now it's in jeopardy. I decided that I would take the course as if it was a normal course, and I studied normally, and I got the best grades in the class. Later, I went back to the professor to plead for her to change her mind and to help my situation, and then she told me that she would not change anything and that I would fail the class. She even joked about seeing me in her class the following year. I said, well, if God wants to help me, he could help me. And then she said, and I want you to listen very closely to what the professor said. She said, I want to see if your God is stronger than I am. I want to see if he has more power to do here than I do here in the university. Now, if you're ever in a position where somebody in power says something like that to a believer, what you need to do is you need to go out and buy a big bag of popcorn and find a nice, comfortable chair, because you're going to see something happen. She goes on to say, I returned home and continued to pray. Throughout the quarter, I would be entitled to 18 absences, but there was 19 Saturdays. One. So I would be disapproved for one single absence. On the very last Friday of the quarter, I went to school sad because I would have to redo the course from the beginning, even being the best student in the class. But I was happy because everyone at the university knew my story and how I had been faithful to God. So she was still happy. When I got to the main entrance of the history building, about 30 people were there cheering for me. And I had the biggest surprise. All my colleagues were waiting for me. Why? Because the former university principal, who had already been sick for a long time, had died that Friday morning, and we would have a holiday with no classes on Friday, no classes on Saturday, in his honor. And that's how everyone knew that my God was very powerful. On that day, I went to my professor's office desk, and she wasn't there, but I left a card, and it said, what do you suppose she wrote on that card? This is what she wrote on the card. I can do all things in Christ who strengthens me. I graduated with honors and had one of the best grades in the university that year. God can do the same thing for you if you trust him, she says. What a story. What a wonderful story, and that story needs to be shared. I found in the past that, you know, God does stuff for us a lot of times in miraculous ways, but then we share it with our family, we share it with our friends, we might share it with our church, but then it's forgotten. Sometimes it gets published in a book. If you go to the ABC, there's a number of angel books, another number of miracle books, not a lot, but a number of them. But here God has given us an opportunity in the Stories of Faith program to gather them together into programs and play them over and over again so people can be reminded God is powerful and he can take care of your problems. We talk about other things during the programs too. Sometimes we talk about when Satan does miracles. That's an important thing to talk about because it's not just God that does things like that. We talk about questions like, what do you do when God says no to your prayer request? And it might be a very big prayer request. So we cover other things like that. I wanted to share another story with you, just to give you an idea of the types of things we tell about modern-day miracle stories. How many of you are familiar with the college, Pacific Union College, PUC? I went there for a short time. Maybe you did too. There was a story that came out of there that happened years ago that I've always thought about. It had my mind going, my imagination going. And it goes something like this. There was a young lady who was attending Pacific Union College, And to make extra money, she would go down into the valley to work at somebody's house. You know, housekeeping, whatever. And while she was at school, her dean, the dean of the women's dean there, at their worship times, said, had them memorize a verse. Maybe you've heard this verse before. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him. Pardon me, and delivers them. She had them memorize them that verse. She had the young ladies memorize that verse. Well, she needed that verse, and I'll tell you what happened, why she did. The young lady was down in the valley taking care of the house she was at, and when she came back and tried to get back to school, she inadvertently got onto the wrong bus. Inadvertently on the wrong bus. Next thing, she found herself in downtown San Francisco. Would you like a young lady from college age to be by herself, alone, finding herself in a big terminal, bus terminal down in downtown San Francisco? Not a good place to be. And she didn't feel safe at all. She was out there, she got off the bus, and she looked around, and she didn't know who she could talk to, because there were men that looked like she shouldn't talk to them. And there was really nobody around she could ask. So she did. She said, I need to take a time out. She went to the women's restroom, and she decided that that was a nice private place that she could pray to God. And guess what text might have come to mind for her at that moment that she needed help? The angel of the Lord encamps around all those who fear him and delivers them. She came out of the bathroom still not knowing what to do, but the moment she walked out, she did see a man walking in front of her. And she looked under his arm, and he was carrying a Bible. And she goes, well, he must be a good man. At least he's carrying a Bible. So she decided to follow him. And she followed this man down this way, over that way, up these stairs, down another hallway. And before she knew it, that man had led her to a bus. And you know, on the front of buses, they sometimes have their destination written right above them, and they'll scroll through, or nowadays it's digital. Well, at the time, she looked up, and on the front of that bus was the word Angwin. Angwin? In a bus depot in downtown San Francisco? Well, that in itself is miraculous. Who in the world puts Angwin at the top of a bus going, you know, nobody goes out there. So she thought to herself, well, it's at least my way home. So she got onto the bus. The man who she had been following with the Bible under his arm had stopped at the top of the stairs and appeared to be talking to the bus driver. So she went around him and went and found a seat and sat down. She looked up at that man, the man with the Bible, and the bus driver didn't seem to be talking to him or anything. Didn't seem to even notice who he was. And then the man with the Bible turned and walked off the bus. That's odd. So she watched this man walk away from the bus, and as she was watching him, he disappeared right in front of her eyes. She would later say it was like somebody turned off a light bulb. Whoosh, gone. Who led her to that bus that she needed to go to? The Lord, who still does miracles, even though it's not Bible times. Sometimes people call Better Life, and you know what one of the most common prayer requests we get at Better Life is? And we get a number of prayer requests. But one that comes up again and again and again is the prayer request, please pray for my children. Please pray for my children. Over and over again. Everyone's hearts is for their children. My boys have left the truth. They were raised knowing what was what, but they left. Please pray they'll come back. And I encourage, when I'm talking on the phone and talk to somebody in that situation, I try to encourage them and tell them, you know, keep praying for them. And sometimes I share this following story with them because I want them to know the value of their prayers. And I want them to be encouraged to pray all the time. Maybe you've heard this story. It's one of those stories that bears repeating and memorizing and knowing. Do any of you know the lady, her name is Josephine Cunnington Edwards? She wrote the books Swift Arrow, some other things. She was well known for being a storyteller. You go to camp meeting, she'd be there around the kids telling them stories. I've never met her, but I heard her recordings, and she was quite animated, if you ever heard her or saw her in person. Well, she told a story once about her family, about her brother. They came from a large family, Josephine did, and she was down towards the end of the kids. Above her was her brother Bill, whom she apparently was very fond of. Now, Bill had grown up in the truth, had known what is what, but he decided to leave. Now, he wasn't a bad guy, but he got into alcohol, got into tobacco, got into other things he knew he shouldn't get into. And Josephine was very worried about his salvation. Well, actually, his mother and father were worried about his salvation. And they would pray for all the kids, and they would pray for Bill. Wild Bill. Well, Bill was known for not really showing his emotion. I mean, if he got in trouble and they went to give him a whipping, remember the olden days when kids would talk about getting a whipping? He would say, "You're not going to make me cry." I don't even think Bill cried at the funeral of his parents. But Josephine had a heart for Bill, and when she was a missionary with her husband in Africa, she devoted one day a week for fasting and prayer for Bill. "Lord, you got to work on Bill. You got to reach out to Bill. We've got to win Bill." Josephine later moved back to the United States. The members of the conference, I believe, told her, "Josephine, we have a church that needs help. Our men are overseas right now helping, of the chaplains and everybody, the pastors. We need help with this particular church. Will you go cover for us and lead that church until we can get some other people?" She said, "I don't really feel like I should do that right now." Her husband, I think, had recently died, and you know how it is when something bad happens to you, you just feel like, "I don't want to do anything right now." But they worked on her and worked on her, and Josephine finally said, okay, I'll take that church, I'll go over. And she joined that church when they were having their week of prayer. And she arrived there and she said, "I don't know what to talk about." And the Lord impressed her, "Get up front and I'll tell you what to talk about." So Josephine stood in front of the church, week of prayer, everyone's gathered around. They don't know her very well, if at all. She really doesn't know them. She says, "There is a lot of hypocrisy in this church." The Lord starts giving her words to say. "You're doing this and you're doing that and da-da-da-da. You're asking for the Lord's blessing and you're acting like this and da-da-da-da-da-da." Boy, what a thing to start with. You ever have a pastor come in and right off the bat they hit you with something? "But you know," she said, "this is week of prayer. We need to turn our hearts towards the Lord. I'm going to ask them to play the organ, and while they're doing that, I want you to think about somebody in this church that you need to make things right with. I want you to think about clearing things between you and God. Let's take the time to do this right now." She says, "And if you can't do that, if for some reason you can't find it in your heart to do that, there's a back door and you can leave too." So they all knelt down in their church and the organ started playing, the piano or organ. And as they were doing that, you would hear people get up, you'd creaking of the ground as people would go talk to each other and sit next to somebody else. And you'd hear people crying, closing wounds that had been made between each other. And after a time, it ended. They opened their eyes, and some of the people had headed out the back door. But a number of them had stayed. And Josephine got in front of the group and said, "Okay, now we can do something." She says, "Because God can do something with a small group of dedicated people who have repented than a whole church full of hypocrites." "Okay." And she said, "Let's pray. This is a week of prayer. Let's pray." She says, "I have a burden on my heart. I want to pray for my brother Bill." And she explained the whole story to them. She said, "Let's pray that he gives up alcohol and tobacco." And they were praying for him. A little while later, you see, Bill had married an Adventist lady, Mary. Mary called Josephine and said, "Josephine, have you been praying for Bill?" "Well, yes, we have." "Well, keep it up." "Well, why? What's going on?" "I came home one day, and Bill was out there, and I saw a fire in the backyard. I didn't know what was going on. I went out, and he was burning all his tobacco. Went inside, and he had dumped the liquor down the sink. And he was muttering to himself, 'I'm going to do this if it kills me.'" "Keep doing whatever you're doing." So they went back, and they continued praying for Bill. I mean, you had the encouragement, right? Something was happening. And then they got another response from Mary of something that had happened that was quite dramatic. I've never heard of anything like this happening before. You see, Bill was at home one day, sitting in the living room reading the newspaper, and Mary, she was in the kitchen preparing for supper. And Bill heard a knock or something at the door, And a visitor at this time. And yet while he was thinking about this, in walked somebody into his living room. Can you even imagine who walked into Bill's living room? Bill would later retell the story, and he said, it was Jesus. Jesus walked into my living room. He says, I know it was Jesus. I could tell because of the scars in his hands. I knew it was him. And Jesus came over, whether in vision or in reality, and he pulled the recliner chair next to Bill, which was his wife's, I think, pulled it over and sat in front of Bill and said, Bill, I have a lot of work to do before I come back to get my children. Take you, for instance. I have over 50 years of prayers to answer in your behalf. Your parents went to their grave believing that they would not see you in the kingdom. Bill, won't you do me a favor? Won't you give me your heart so that I can present you to them on that great resurrection morning? Bill, the man who never cried, tough as nails, broke down in a flood of tears. He couldn't stop. And he said, yes, yes, yes. And the vision, or Jesus, faded. His wife heard commotion and came in, and that's where she found him, just sobbing. She thought something medically was wrong with him. And while he finally got his composure, he said, Mary, call the pastor. I need to talk to the pastor right now. Well, the good part of the story is that Bill did give his heart to Jesus. And he didn't live much longer than that either. So I fully believe that on resurrection morning, Bill's parents are going to get a wonderful surprise. So I tell that story to parents when they call in and say, don't you give up praying for your children. You may not see them change. You may not see them change, but you keep praying for them. The value of stories. You tell stories like this and you encourage people. Encourage people to do the Lord's work. You know, we're part of a story too. We're part of a story that's entitled The Last Days. And we get to live through some very interesting times. Sometimes it's good to take a look and see where we stand, because over the course of our 6,000 whatever year history, you may have noticed that God had never released technology to the world. Throughout most of those thousands of years, if a man wanted to get, or a woman wanted to get from one place to another, you got on a horse. That's about as quick as you're going to make it. For thousands of years, that's the way it's been. But then the Lord, in these last days, has opened up something miraculous in the form of technology. And I want you to take a moment to think about what God has done. I'm going to read to you some inventions that have been made that came about between the years 1900 and the year 2000. I'll go fast because the list is a little long. But just think about what has changed in the course of 100 years as opposed to the thousands of years that came before it. Okay? Are you ready? Buckle up. Here goes. 1902, air conditioning. 1904, radar. 1905, plastic. 1908, Model T Ford for the masses. 1910, neon lamps. By the way, all those things I just mentioned happened before Ellen White passed away. Let's put it in context. Okay, continue. 1916, sonar. 1921, robots. 1923, hearing aids. 1925, television. 1930, jet engines. 1933, electron microscope. 1939, helicopters. 1942, first nuclear reactor built. 1946, microwave oven. 1947, transistors. 1948, general purpose computers. 1953, transistor radio. 1956, videotape recorder. 1957, first satellite launched. 1960, laser. 1961, man in space. 1967, portable calculator. 1969, internet. 1969, man on the moon. 1973, cellular phones. 1975, personal computers. 1984, Mac computer, which is my favorite. 1989, World Wide Web. 1990, Photoshop. 1992, text messages. 1996, DVDs. Friends, we went from the Model T Ford to the moon in less than 100 years. Are you amazed? I'm shocked. Why did God hold this knowledge from us until now? I think there's many reasons probably, but we probably would have killed ourselves. Nuclear bombs and stuff. God kept this hidden from us for a reason. Now we're in the last days and God's letting a lot of things be shown. I do want to warn parents right now because things are changing so quickly. I hope you realize what happens when you give a child a smartphone, unsupervised. You do realize, don't you? They have access to the internet if they're by themselves on the internet with a smartphone. They have access to anything. And I don't know if you realize what anything means, but anything means horrific things. And you know how kids are, they're curious. And their friends talk among each other. And they share how to do this and how to do that. Oh, there's an app over here that lets you hide pictures from your folks. Oh, there's this, that, and the other thing. If you're allowing your children to access some technology and they're very young, watch what they do. Please. You have no idea what they can get themselves into. Very, very easily. Another reason perhaps God held back technology from us. It's just, I don't think it's been really good on our kids. But I also wanted to give a warning about stories. Stories can be great, but stories can also, there's something to be warned about. Because there's somebody else who likes stories. Satan loves stories. Do you know why Satan loves a good story? Because it will keep you from thinking about what you need to be thinking about. And so Satan has these writers write up all these amazing stories that are all made up to keep people entrenched. It might be a soap opera. It might be a movie. It might be a television series. Because when you're involved in their world, you learn about them, about their lifestyles, and you're also not learning about God or worried about things that have to do about your salvation. So there is a very bad place for stories. Some of you may not realize, but there was a movie franchise out there. Maybe you've heard of it called Star Wars. I'm going to use them as an example. The Star Wars franchise. It's estimated that it's since made over $68 billion for all the bits and pieces they sell. It's all from a made-up story. Pretend places, pretend people, pretend spaceships. They even have pretend worlds that you can visit. Did you know that they're building a hotel that you can go immerse yourselves in, this fake world that they create for a few days, and pretend you're in outer space with your family? It's all made up. But you know, in their worlds that they make up, there's still sin. People can still die. People still get sick. Nothing really good there. But when I was a young person, I felt allured by those types of stories too. But the older I get, the more I realize these things are going to keep me away from what I really want to be a part of, and that is the heavenly story, and a place where you never die, where you're not sick, where you all get along. That's the story I want to be a part of. So don't let Satan use stories to keep you and your kids away from the story you really want to be a part of. God has things in store for us that would blow your mind that you have no comprehension of yet. Use stories to save lives. I do encourage people on the Stories of Faith program. I said, if God has done something for you, write it down. Save it for your family. Make a journal. Tell them what God did for you so it's not lost, so that they can tell it to their children. And they say, you know the time Grandma was saved by such and such? Tell them that story. I find that people generally don't write down their stories. They won't write down their miracles that God has done for them. And then I found other people who write books for their families of things that have happened to them. So make stories work for you, for your family's salvation. That is my encouraging word for you today. And I hope that that brings some encouragement to you. Our closing song, I think, is time now. Somebody's going to come lead for that.